So welcome to another Show and Tell Gallery feature event, Three Friends Mondays. Normally it works where one person is invited and then they invite two other friends. Tonight was Curtis Whitecarrel's night, and he invited three of his friends, and he's not actually performing. So maybe I'm going to let him come up here and tell you all about all of our performers tonight, all three of them. But first, let me say we should, how about we give a warm hand to our barista, Chris, and tip him well tonight. And also, let's thank Three Friends Coffee House and Bobby for allowing us to be here. I'd like to thank all the other members of Show and Tell Gallery, Melissa Silito, Joel Wedgman, who also does podcasting, David DeSerrano, who's probably running the open mic, Mary Slocum, who's in the house right now, who also runs the open mic, Christina Mitsu-White, who runs our website, and Nathan Reynolds, who helps with sound, and I think that might be it at the moment. Anyway, so I'm going to get off the stage and let Curtis tell you about everyone who's going to perform. All three of them are going to perform tonight.
Thank you, Patrick. You're such a wonderful host. So let's thank Patrick also. And I normally hate being a host, even though I host a reading twice a month. But you know, I try to keep things brief, which I'm going to do tonight. So the thing about this reading is, since it's a new year, I thought, well, every year I try and do a show at Three Friends that has something to do with the reading series I run, Ink Noise Review, which used to be called Stone Soup. Then we've done a Doctor Who, Change the Identity, all that, new venue. Anyway, these are three of my personal favorite poets of the ones that we met in 2013. So, and we met over 100 in 2013. We hit the 204 mark of features, not counting repeats, since the 2 years that this show's happened. So my three poets tonight are Ali Yancey, Sarah Weigel, and Lauren Lou Woods, wherever she happens to be hiding right now. But we're gonna start off with Ali Yancey, who is shorter than me, but I'll figure it out the exact height when she gets up here. Fantastic poet. I've recently had the chance to see her stuff on print, however you want to put it. And it's always an honor when you have poets who've read for the very first time at your series. And this is, I believe, only the fourth time Ali has read. And the first three were at Ink Noise. And it's actually true for Lou as well, but let's start with Ali. Please welcome Ali Yancey.
Thanks, Curtis. Hi, guys. Thanks. Like Curtis said, this is only the fourth time that I've read, and I've only actually recently gotten back into poetry. I used to do a lot of lyric stuff, but got caught up in doing non-artistic things for a while, so it's really exciting to come back and be able to perform a little bit. So, let's see. I'm going to start with two of actually some of my older poems from several years ago that I've just now returned back to, and I'm interested to see how much my style has changed, and so it'll be kind of interesting. These first two poems are from about 5 years ago. So, this is called A Certain Beauty. There's a certain beauty in youth. Maybe that is a little bit too tall. There's a certain beauty in youth, the wide eyes and long lashes, the smooth full cheeks, even in tears that spill over raw pink skin, there's a certain beauty in youth. The scabbed knees and crubby nails, and tangled hair and adventure. Even when bright eyes are mischievous and stare without shame, in nightmares and questions, there is a certain beauty in youth. The slumped shoulders hide a fragile ego, and a knowing sneer protects a bold heart. Even through heavy-lidded eyes, even though heavy-lidded eyes tend to stray, and tongues have a lewd disposition, with a cigarette between rouged lips, lit by stolen turquoise lighters, there's a certain beauty in youth. There's a certain beauty in age, the laugh lines and wizened eyes, salt and pepper hair. Even when the body is not what it once was, there's a certain beauty in age. The leathery fingers and wiry eyebrows, larger bottoms and set ways. Even with skin pulled tight over cheekbones and folding gently under the chin, in slippers and stories, there's a certain beauty in age. The shaky hands reach to comfort. The fragile bones creak and shift. Even when bowels deteriorate and teeth sit on the bedside table, with lucidity becoming rare, the last recognition that brightened your face, there's a certain beauty in age. This is called Walls. These walls have the need to be barren. They rot away the paper, paste it on to hide them, reject the thumbtacks, unstick the tape there, peel back the paint, and bare their teeth, yeah. You lie and get caught, break the hands that hold you, snap the fingers that caressed, invalidate her truth. Slam your fist against the wall, it stands straight and mocking. It's all you can do not to cry while fucking. At the thought of your loss, tears burst forth, creeping through your lashes, they're an unknown force. Armies march to the pillow, one abandons its post, slides to a halt, warping the walls, staining the tip of your nose. Okay, so fast forward to now. It's called Figure 8. She's a prowler, all right. Hips gliding through the figure eight her weight hangs on to, suspended by hunting sinews. She smells the hot blush of fear and adoration flutter up my spine, up to lick my gelid lungs, up from that cavern where leaden stomach and high sex share a fire. She muses over my paralysis. I steal for her decision. Survivor's curiosity pins me down. She knows I question my escape. The slow blink. She doesn't even look me straight. I follow her gaze, fixed right through my gasping sinews, through to the light lying across my back. Oh, to be hunted again by the finest muscles swimming under predatory skin. But she just slides past. The swing of her, the mean of her, just saunters on without me. Let's see. The future's bright. Wish you were here. It is timeless and it is now. Unfurling silk, evolved in the struggles of the ocean swells, flowing with milk and honey. Yet you are still asleep, and the crescent leans, halfway house for the tired darkness. Dreams are wont to mingle unabashedly with granola and sweet milk. I blow a sneaky kiss to your perfect furrow, yet unspoiled by light, and the morning smells perfect. So this is, I don't know if you guys ever go back to houses that you lived in as a kid and think about like going up and knocking on the door and being like, hi, like you live here, but I used to live here. Can I look around my old house? And then not doing it. And so that's kind of what this is about. It is still ugly. dyed pink coral in an old woman's bathroom, the squat old woman herself, its sighs, like you could ever hear it. Flat and faded, like pictures in a cedar chest, the house is still there, ugly and waiting, to reveal again the meat on some memory bones. I know it holds nothing but flashes of exploding ceramic and flaming bread. All five syllables of my real name carved when hiding and seeking. Scored with stolen exacto blades, something no one calls me. Could I trace the splintered relief with my thumb again? It could stimulate a revelation. I'll just stick to the pavement, thanks. I can play pretend. I'm a dandelion in seed. My body is bending, but will never follow my own wish lint. You keep on. I'll catch up. Keep on, keep on. Like the hours and the days. I need to see your back moving away so I can remember my roots don't go down here anymore. A small jade. A small jade, reflective and blemishless, beautiful resting in her mediastinum, her heart cavity. The perfect stone. She carries it because it is precious, its worth so appreciable compared to fragile striated tissue, the myocardium, the heart. A glass case for a rib cage, perched on a crooked vertebrae pedestal. I'm the one that shatters, though, when I try to break in. Just to hold it and warm it between my palms. There are some who can spur her gem into pulsing, but palpitations scatter hairline fractures across her skin, a delicate lace of heliotrope contusions, bruising. Fifth of scotch, ready in the glove box, the only way a stone can float. The worst is when she forgets she wants to be. It's called Dreaming Next to You. In my dream, I was a guardian of dreams. I walked tall and light through tide pools, each strange story wetting my ankles, their sunrise colors safe below my shadow. I know it was fiction. Whatever I am, I guard only shame. When I lie down, the truth quiets and I forget. In my dream, I'd hidden it, tucked it away in a gold-lit pool to find it again in a better time. I've lost my way back. When we lie down together, our bodies molding new contours, we seal up my truth and shame, leaving room only for honest skin. We all find reasons for lying. I lie to keep dreaming next to you. It's called End. The woman has awoken, opened her salt-withered eyelids to discover her shifting skin's stained, glowing molten, cracking with fever, gasping for air. The beginning of our last days sways in the twisted ribbons of her graying kelp hair. Rot invades the roots of her teeth. Her shoulders curl like tired fern tendrils under the plague of our swarming black-booted armies. The bellies of her children are tight, churning mercury as they roll and rise, each pink lung spoiled, a limp mouth littered across her holy mountain skirts. She pushes, she rushes to gather them back into her womb, as sparrows collect string when the sun blushes white and sap hardens inside the dense, straight spines of our heartwood. Her crude, slicked hands demand, "What have you done?" Our every whispered denial, a gruesome creature, seething from her iciest depths, inciting her tempest and gale with the resonance of a collective sulfur hiss. The woman has awoken. Raging with the force of all the bones of men, she wrenches the lifeline from our numb, blanched hands. We will be sorry soon enough. This is called Warning Notice, in case you let me go. Careful, you're spilling me. Everything I am afraid of is leaking out. Down my chest, between my breasts, I'm pooling around my ankles. Tide's rising, and I'm losing the distinction between myself and the yawning sea. Mouth is filling fast, reflexively swallowing everything I haven't learned to fear yet. City's heaviness, sharp with acrid piss, the stale sweet of forgetting, the last stomach acid. Dark, scattered pillars stuck in dawn's empty, eyes open for ages, wide and tight like bone-spread skin, knuckles of a clenched fist, the color of lamplight, each caught still and staring on insomnia film. I can see, but I can't look. My spine knows those eyes, how they follow like shadows, the same way our hands knew throats and wrists before. The same way our alabaster knights, splitting raw your sable backs, stalked you as prey, bound you to our feverish ankles, and drowned you in your blackness. The same way you know I won't look. Just scorch marks, carbon silhouettes branded on the edge, only shadows in the lamplight. If my eyes were to fall on a grit-branded cheek, a soft lip, I might fill with faces and find myself alone. For a moment, we will be close enough to touch. And last one. And this one I wrote for a friend of mine whose wife recently got pregnant, and I'm very happy about it. He is also a poet, so it makes a little bit more sense. I'm working on a poem. It's still so small, but it grows into every breathing moment. We found the first words taking shape, precious, curled up gently in the soft darkness and protective warmth of a new shared language. It's still a little hard to imagine I have my hand in its existence. I'll share it with you, proudly, just as soon as it is born.
Thank you, Allie Yancey. So, up next is a poet that was originally recommended to me by Leah Rayner. And so, what best thing I can say about Sarah Weigel is, besides the fact she's a good poet that happens to come off as positive and contemplative at the same time, when describing her earlier this evening, I actually used the term thing as a compliment. As in having a bouncing, warm personality that goes beyond person. Well, I kind of referred to you as the tall blonde thing. So, and then I went on to explain. So, and I guess you could say your poetry is also tall blonde things in that sense. But it's all in a good way, and I'm so happy to have her also as a member of the Ink Noise family. And her and Allie are both going to be in the debut issue of Ink Noise Quarterly, which will be coming out in March. And need to talk to Lou about, like, she was supposed to show up at the thing where we done the live auditions, and I may have to cheat, but break the rules. But first up, pardon my wandering, Sarah Weigel.
Similar to Allie, I have some poems that I wrote quite a while ago. So I'll start with those first. I'll start with one for my sister, since she's here. This is my sister, Emily Berry. But I wrote this poem for her in college, when shortly after she broke up with her fiance and I was having these disappointing adventures in romance myself. It is called Flowers for Emily. When you're lonely and aimless, just ride around town on a blue bicycle with a bunch of bright yellow flowers. People will look and wonder who loves you and ask whether you love him too. This one I wrote in the bathtub, so it's a little scandalous. It was a bubble bath, if that makes any difference. It's called Reflections in the Bath. Kohler, sounds like color. Shiny, silver, cold, hot, two-in-one cleanser, falling water, antibacterial spring. White, blue, amber, steamed milk with too much air. White, green, ochre lilies hung out to dry on stainless steel. Cold tile holds the secret Victoria's kept for so long. All remains this way. I was debating whether to read this part, because I've revised this several times. All remains this way. Till hot, cold, rainbow bubbles stop shining color and make way for reflection. I anticipate I'll evaporate into dream. This one I wrote as a tribute to Rimsky's Course the Coffee House. Sorry, three friends. So this is Rimsky's Portland, Oregon, to gravity and the calming effects of Darjeeling. Darjeeling is not hallucinogenic. I am not exaggerating, not dreaming. With the help of mechanical gravity, the table behind the piano and occasional pianist grows taller, and when tallest, grows shorter, but not so shortest that dessert is lost beneath laps and knees. Not to the rhythm of keys this table ascends ever so, until resting elbows lead forkfuls closer to lips in conversation, oblivious of absurdity. This kind of strangeness is served under tea. In its descent, the table pulls shoulders downward, so hands and herbal steam have no need to make the usual long journey. I stare at my table for a solitary moment, waiting for it to inch outward from the wall and politely pass under my left hand. But it is hopelessly an ordinary table. right, I think I will move on to the recent ones. So the last few poems I've written just this year. This first one is called I Am Not. And this poem I wrote in response to the very popular I am statements and I guess the philosophy surrounding that. I love the idea of self-affirmation, but I think it's equally important to recognize that we're not everything unto ourselves. Divinity runs through me, makes a home. I am not its wellspring. Draws from my depths a light, hands it over, truly mine. Small, frail, fearful. Big, strong, brave. I am not the same every day. Divinity runs through me as a gift, a grace, a taste of perfection. I am not the stream. Humility bows before divinity, revealing, I am not worthy to host this company, but my body is made a mountain, a temple holy anyway. This one is called Grace Manifests. Sometimes, time slows for me, like it does every day for snails, so as to give them a sense of accomplishment, true enough to believe enough to keep moving, though it be barely. And I take it as a gift, as it leads me to see the glory in being small and dependent on grace. This one is called Innate, which I just looked up the synonyms for because I like doing that because I'm kind of a nerd with words. And a synonym for it was Native, which is appropriate to the poem as well. So the title has a couple meanings. This poem is for and about my father. You'll appreciate this. I should say, my father is a member of some Native American tribe somewhere, but we don't know which or where, because our family recorded in the history books that we are African American, which I thought for a while, I was like, well, that explains my booty and my hair, but but actually we're Native American, and they just, back then it was better to be African American than Native American. So it's kind of a mystery, but my dad has always been this wandering free spirit connected to the earth. I think I get a little bit of that from him. This city life just doesn't suit you. A way older than your first memory ties you. Your wrists have never been bound by cufflinks and starched white sleeves. Instead, your hands have become the leather you used to make the moccasins that hid your feet from the pavement. Your arms have turned to the buffalo hides you tanned in the yard one Indian summer. I danced in a drum circle when you were gone and recognized the earth from somewhere deep within my heels. As I moved with the rhythm of tribal hands on tight, stretched skin, the heartbeat of the woman who raised your grandmother traveled through my root and outstretched my limbs in a motion I had never made, but knew wildly. You say no one taught you how to weave a dream catcher, but on a whim, after a walk through the Oregon woods, you made one. I found one of your smallest creations, lost in the driveway when I was 10, and hung it on the wall above my bed. It's been there forever. No one taught me how to dance, to turn my body into water and tune my heart to the pulse of an ancient tree. I circled around over and again until thousands of rings formed. The more I danced, the older I grew. City life doesn't suit me either. My feet are dressed in leather, so the cool earth reveals her wisdom as I capture it in the wrinkles of my feet. I wear feathers so I can fly right into the woven sinew encircled by tiny bare branches and pray over you while you dream. Curtis, how much time do I have?
I'd go with 5 more minutes.
Okay. I'll read another short poem and then I'll get to the last long one. So this one I actually may have been the only poem I've ever written while running. I used to go on runs for exercise. But they slowly became these moving meditations. And I discovered that through this natural flow of just words and phrases coming into my mind as I ran. So I wrote this poem. It's called, I Think to Myself. To every girl who has ever been hit on by a US Postal Service worker. Because this actually happened. Take a run in the rain and don't stop for anything. Not for pain, nor admiration, not even for the postman. He delivers letters you will inevitably discard. His name is Giovanni. G-I-O-V-A-N-N-I. Whatever drives him must be governmental. So keep running. Take one lane, maybe two, be both coming and going. Water and sweat are the same in time. Moving in between blinks, take the small center space. Run with feet along two yellow pencils stretching all the way back to that recess mud puddle, once bakery and bird bath. One or several silver whistles between lips compel freedom's curtains, and you are forced to forsake raining, running for the indoors once again. Actually, I'm gonna cut that one out. I'm gonna end it at birdbath. Do you guys agree? What do you think? What do you say? End at birdbath? That poem deserves to be ended there. Okay. See, I'm like constantly reworking my poems. I'm never satisfied. This happens in my life too, you know. My husband can attest to that. Okay. So this is my last one here. And this one I actually wrote today. I've been fighting off this nasty cold, just like the other 70% of the population at the moment. And I thought to myself, like, I don't feel like writing poetry. I always write when I feel inspired, when I feel strong, when I feel like hearty. And I was feeling such the opposite of that. And I thought, well, why not write from that place? Like, write from this place of weakness and frailty. And so this is what has come out of that. This is called Pilgrim Creature. Will my bones be hollow while my heart is filled? I want to be brimming everywhere and all at once. But when I am tired, drained of force and light, I love more deeply. I walk shoeless and disheveled, carrying a basket I wove to gather plums delectably purple and red. This vital vessel pounding from beneath my bones bleeds fruit ripe with the weight of creation. Shrouded in sticky pieces of skin I thought I'd already washed away, the shrapnel of disappointments long past lingers on. But I look lightly. I walk intently because a creature called joy goes before me, blessing the salt of my tears, the very rain that speckles mud over my thin feet, as though they were a canvas for the colors of glory, the accidental art of love.
Thank you, Sarah. And thank you, Allie. So, and now we get to our last poet. And, you know, sometimes I have to admit, I'm the host of a reading just so I can hear, ask other people to read. And so what do I say about the final reader of the night? She gets asked to do a lot of stuff, and she's not even trying in this poetry shit, is what's cool. So I'm going to go down to your list of accomplishments, and you're going to stand there and you're going to like it. So she's, a lot of stuff is happening. So, and a lot of stuff is being asked through me, and I'm going to have to, there's just been a couple more I'm going to have to tell you about to see if you approve or not. Everybody's going through me. It's like I'm the grandfather for all the, for all these poets. So, so Lou Woods read for the first time at our old incarnation, Stone Soup. In two more days, it will be exactly 1 year. So she's done nothing but features in the last year. She's one of the few readers who can, poets in town who can claim she's only done features. She's, I believe, is going to be on Talking Earth in February, correct, Patrick?
Yes.
And she was asked by Laura Lee Hugh, former president of the Oregon Poetry Association, to go do a reading in Eugene. And I've been talking with Camille Perry. We both, we're going to try and kidnap you and get you down there. Tentative scheduling stuff aside. You're also nominated to be a member of Jenny Forrester's Unchased Reader Series, which is really exclusive. And anyway, that's probably enough for now. It's also, she developed a nickname by saying that she has a baby voice. We shall call her the baby-voiced badass. And also, Tony Fannenstiel, who runs Verse in Person, called you one of the most fascinating readers he'd ever seen, because you look really happy when you read really depressing poetry, and it leaves everybody hypnotized. Lou Woods!
Yeah, I think that's good. Okay, I don't really know how to follow that up, so I'm just going to read some things. And I don't really title very many of my poems, so probably just going to breeze right through this. All right. Everything went dry, but still I know the shape her hair makes when pressed to my inner thigh. The morning is clear or wet without a single sympathy pang for the lost saliva I left on your glittering cheekbone. And so I am trembling against this early light without you guiding me in my rearview mirror. But the silhouette of you all in black keeps me steady even as the wind blows. I imagine a whole life in your sheets and dream of keeping you in all these tangles. Don't dare move against me in the night because I only want to trace your bones and etch a fine countenance in my fleshy thigh by moonlight. I can lay so perfectly still, but only while considering your profile and the pattern of your breath that beats like Morse code upon my breastbone. Tell me what to do with the spare daylight. I only want to hold you with perfect empty arms that know your sense of self-illumination. See, I can glow too, but what if it's only for you? Will you be scared for all my quaking? You have seen these paper-cut arms, but I didn't mean for you to see them shaking by candlelight. I have not your strength, but don't let me scare you. I shiver and shake, but hold my own, and I have seen such resolve reflected back into eyes I swear are something other than brown because they know luminescence. I have not your sense of light, but you make me so still in those two arms I dare not mention with the threat of sun seeming so close to your corner windows. These ever-curving lips only bend to consume you. You swear I could never look fierce, but I promise I'll eat that weak heart of yours in a single silent gulp. And I won't waste a drop of that ignoble blood, no matter how metallic the taste. I dream of all the shitholes I'm doomed to inhabit in my dim future and watch my legs grow strong with the stomping out of whole fully formed apartments. But it won't mean a thing without a stranger complimenting their form in the summer sweating center of Central Park. You asked to kiss my eyelids once, but I'd only consent if I could draw blood from the secret spot that ached for me between thumb and index finger. What is it I'm trying to say here? I'm trying to find the right size patch. I'm trying to sew things up. I am trying to stitch this gaping wound closed, but all my strings, they keep dissolving. I sit stock still between seizures. I know there is this moment here, right here, and I think I can know the moments adjacent to it, but how do I connect all my moments with a straight line? I know it is all linear, but these threads are all unraveling. I am 25, except for when I am 14 or 22 or 7. I look in the mirror at every age and know my home is these old bones encased in flesh that is new every single day, and so I am dizzy upon waking. I didn't know how to live inside myself and mistook self-alienation for restlessness. Chalked up my self-loathing to wanderlust. 25 years spent foraging for a home where I could hang my hide from a hook and spill my inside parts on the front foyer floor to take a bath unencumbered by the stabbing sensation that comes after catching one's reflection while lost deep in thought. I thought I didn't want a face, but then I stood up straight and realized all my change of scenery was a symptom. I was starving for a home, but now I know it's in the curving roundness of my belly, in the way my hair curls in opposite directions, how my skin absorbs light and makes freckles. Place is what I carry tucked behind my ear, and I can't wait to get there. Sure, the mountains make me gasp here, and I love the city from every bridge I cross, but all my prayers come from my own hip bones. I am a secret I don't have to share. And in the morning, you will find it difficult to apply eyeliner while crying, because the realization that the only thing you have learned this summer is that you are really, truly, profoundly alone, and it has knocked the wind out of you, like falling backwards off her trampoline on the last day of summer, when your vision grew sharp while your lungs quit listening. The sky didn't have a single cloud, and that chest-heavy pushing filled your whole body with a certain ache before the dog licked your face and your gasp racked your body. And there, just there, at the edge of your line of vision, you found a cloud. This morning is before the dog's tongue found your forehead. It is a whole body hurt today. But know that in 2 weeks, you will have grown skilled at the act of blending black eyeliner with the saltwater tears you cry for not finding a single cloud to hold you to this sun-slick earth. read the waning crescents in the bottom of our coffee mugs like runes that will predict a future, contradicting the knowledge I store in my bones. I know the painful ache in my limbs means I am still growing towards you. So I swallow sobs and instead make two fists, feign I'm a fighter, shadow boxing with this tender heart that was only meant for you. On Tuesday, we don't have coffee. So all I have in my hands is the bone bare mugs and the searing conviction I was made for you. I only look inside myself to find the inner fault in this configuration of brittle bones that makes me an island, and know that any origination is here, in the warm part of this shaking torso. I have gone gangrene with this hideous self-doubt that stunts my limbs and leaves me weak in body. I am not who I want to be to you. And all my dim twistings and misspoken words will not form the proper ringlets to contain you. I can only ever be the stranger you fucked and couldn't bear to look at in full daylight, which seems fair because I cannot face my own countenance in the bare light of a nascent moon pressing to my nighttime window. Sometimes I feel so many aches, I think I can only vomit in response to all this hideous shaking. What if I had the fucking words for this? I try to prepare for a sparring, but I would only hide these paper cut arms from you in sleeves of colored paper, like rainbow hues could lend a sense of fantasy to all this red bleeding. And I have learned to bear the sickly scars of overwrought nights like a badge of fucking honor, because if these silly shaky lines could scare you off after whole full felt weekends, I am a monster. And their sickly form under a subway train lit fluorescent makes more sense in conveying a story than any gleaning you could feel at pit of the stomach first meetings, where my hair is too vague to form an impression. Because I am foggy on the forebrain that only seeks the proper leanings of endless coils. I can talk about your girlfriend, but no, it will only ever synthesize as an autobiography with the flimsy benefit of flowery language, because honey, you are not alone in loving words. I am the pull of the second syllable of undulate. I close my eyes with feeling when I utter the slick syllables that only feel sincere in silken sheets at the intersection of sunset and I know the taste of a thousand words in a way more intimate than your mouth has been on mine. And instead of feeling sad, it feels like the space you allow my body to linger. You can put your fingers inside me, but don't feign trying to inhabit these veins, because it is only my mucous membranes you dare to penetrate with that cowardly sagging flesh. If you hold the right posture, maybe it won't hurt when I set you afire and leave you alone with the expectation of finding a city skeleton burning up my bed in the evening. That one was kind of angry. It's hard to follow that up. When she sits quite still and is 25 years old, she finally understands the feeling she got while hiding at the very center of round clothing racks as her mother shopped in circles all around her. She wants to be found out, but only shakes the finest of fabrics with her imprecise bone structure, and so stays silent while not knowing how to move an indefinite shade. There are a string of disorienting experiences that makes her feel like a child lost in a mall. Like maybe the right grip on her crushable fingers could make any difference in the sight of her specific suffering. Like maybe at this picnic, while early summer sun seeks to flay her in front of company, she can lay on her back and call up the thought of a mother, like a certain smell could calm such rapid heartbeat fire. That laying on the grass might be enough. Or what if she pumped her legs against the rays that sought speaking up among such heavy-tongued northwestern boughs? She will wake up next to a girl she can't bear to describe with words, and will sit erect while sipping coffee and not know what to do when faced with a camera. She doesn't know the proper framing for a face she has yet to touch in this naked, gleaming bedroom. And so she will only make acute angles with this Wednesday gloom. None of them dare to acknowledge with their young heat. Okay. In the ghostly quiet night, when your body is a mere dark impression at my side in bed, I swear I do not sleep. I shut my eyes and will the delicate vessels that line my thin eyelids to follow the noble curves of your own fine locks that I need no light to know, for I have every strand committed to memory. When the day springs up cold and damp and bright, I pluck every sweet word that's fallen from your tongue and line my winter coat with them, that I may be spared the cold, the blisters and abrasions. I don't need a thing like coherence at this time, and we live in one bed, but don't know what to make of any wall. The sounds tumble down from the ceiling, and I just ask that you'll pull me from the rubble. We are still, we are silent, we are perfect. The hunger is only a subtle reverberation in bones that couldn't know me. When I close my eyes and try to draw you to me, it is only the vague idea, the bloom of your bud that opens and closes as many times as I open and close eyes filled to spilling. Take it away. Take it away. I moved in ways that propelled you further from me all the time. My lips left me. Carried by wind, by rain, but mostly the stars. They took me on their back so I could really be somewhere. Oh, you endless pounding. Oh, you heap of sawdust she leaves in her wake. And still I chew splinters in my lungs. So even the minuscule blood droplets I exhale know your name and the dim, wandering shape of your back. The summer was dying when I met you because I used two hands to kill it on another coast that hurts to speak of. I was covered in scabs and bruises from a fight I can't recall, except for all those morning-leaning fragments, shattered glass dreams catching light. I confuse bravery with blurred vision, but in the hazy weeping heat, you always stood solid and let me fill my vision with you. I waited for the nights I could trace your skin with bare skimming fingers. But even in your bed, my hands shook for want, and a spare tendril of hair was enough to set me ablaze, thighs shaky, trembling. I only waited to see what record you would put on next. The light was changing when I realized I loved you, our shadows growing long. The sea air still clung to your hair the same way I held fast to your chest. On the couch, we barely fit into my minivan, with the doors open to catch a breeze I wouldn't notice because you so fully filled my cells. I want all the sand that fell off your insoles that afternoon to hang in a frame on the wall that I may remember your specific smell while soaked in sun and all my spare windswept blue hair. I made you home in the autumn. Razor blade at ready, I wanted to carve you a space in my two arms because this flesh has been so easy to dispose. The curve of my skin and muscle was made for the shape of your head. So I buried all the sharp things when you taught me I didn't have to be whittled and crown my shoulder blades with kisses. It is winter now, and we are cold, but your cheeks still taste and smell the same, so I can go on walking at length with such a sweet reminder tucked into my right boot. I sit perfectly still on weekdays and wait for the moment I'm in bed with you, and our bodies find each other in sleep and dreams and thirst and hunger and fit together like the whole world is only what we can contain in these hot sheets.
Thank you, Lou. And thank you to Al Yancey. Thank you to Sarah Weigel. And of course, thank you to who just read. That was a wonderful show, and I was glad to get all three of you in the one per just kick-ass hour. And so now we're about to get ready for the show-and-tell open mic. And I'll just hand everything to Patrick and say those three ladies are three of the best examples as to why Ink Noise is just a kick-ass show that you can see twice a month, first Friday and third Sunday. Thank you all.
So we're going to have the sign-up for the open mic, and that is going to be by the Cream and Sugar, I believe. Is that true or not? And the sign-up will be in about... It's supposed to be at 8 o'clock. Anyone who has never read at the show and tell open mic should go to the front of the list. Front of the line, excuse me. Not front of the list. You can sign up wherever you want on the list. But if you have not performed here before, you should go to the front of the list. And now David is over there, so I guess sign up is happening now. The vultures are out. And we will start at about 8:15. Thanks, everyone. Thanks to Curtis for setting up this great event. And thanks to the three performers tonight.